In the early 1950s, Kodiak citizens gathered together, signed a petition hoping to save the old Erskine House, which had been sold to Donnelly and Atchison's as part of the mercantile company here. But it was not to happen. The building was used as a rental by DNA, and it wasn't until 1962 that the building received National Historic Landmark status on June 13th by the Secretary of the Interior. Dr. Bob Johnson had worked long and hard filling out many forms, doing much review, often using Mr. Erskine's notes to put the building on the register. This designation as being a National Register site was very important for later in 1964 when the earthquake tsunami happened. The building was purchased by Alaska State Housing Authority and became part of the urban renewal plan for the city of Kodiak. I'd like to back up a bit. In 1954, a group of citizens had banded together to form a nonprofit corporation, a 501c3, which is education, known as the Kodiak and Aleutian Island Historical Society. There were about 50 members. They were all interested in the history of the area and saving things. They created a society. They got their nonprofit status. And later, in 58, when they were given a 26-foot Koniag Bidarka, they opened up a small museum with volunteer help in a World War II Quonset in downtown Kodiak. Of course, this site was affected also by the earthquake, and the society was told that they would have to move their small museum pieces, and they worked with the Alaska State Housing Authority to lease the Erskine House. And they put the collection in, and there started a tremendous amount of work renovating the building, doing a lot of cleaning up because it was in bad repair. In fact, we have spent over $500,000 repairing the foundation, the roof, the windows. We wired and plumbed the second floor. We put in carpet, and we did a lot of scrubbing. As you know, formal statehood was in 59. And the building became very important for the state of Alaska. It is known as the oldest Russian-built structure in North America. There are four left from the Russian-American times, two in Sitka and one at Fort Ross, but this is the oldest. There was a feasibility report by the National Park Service in 1965, and in 1967 it was leased by the Kodiak Historical Society. And the Alaska Centennial Commission funds were used to expose the logs, which were covered with many, many coats or hangings of wallpaper, and install first floor electricity. The Kodiak Rotary Club Rural Cap did lots of work on the building, or donated lots of funds to repair different things. The roof was leaking. After the earthquake, downtown Kodiak was in a time of rebuilding, and there was lots of construction going on, and the society put a caretaker into the building to kind of keep control of safety, and also to open it for people when they came by and wanted to see what it was. The Lions Club helped also. They helped paint the outside with the Rotary. The state of Alaska came through with a new shingle roof and new furnaces. The old building seems to really use furnaces. We've had furnaces put in 1970, in 1980, and I believe in 1984 we had another one. So we do, in the winter, the furnace almost has to work full time. In 1972, the city of Kodiak accepted responsibility for the building, and it is now owned by them. The Kodiak Historical Society, as a nonprofit, manages the Bronoff Museum in the building. We continued making improvements such as a burglar alarm, a Halon fire suppression system, which, as you know, in 1995, Halon will be outlawed, and we will have to do a replacement chemical for the fire suppression system. The one nice thing about Halon is it does not damage anything. It's extremely good for computer rooms, motor rooms, and that sort of thing. In a building as large as this, we feel that it would be adequate, but we've never tested it. Hopefully, we will always not have fire. We're quite careful about no smoking. And those that want to cook outside, we caution to stay away from the building. In 1977, the Kodiak College taught a course here called Field Methods in Archaeology. We were going to go ahead and repair the foundation, which was quite rotten. And before we did, one of the archaeologists at the college wanted to do a course, and I believe we did 8 test holes. We do have those artifacts here. They were uncovered. I was part of that team. It was really quite interesting. That's when we found quite a few Russian trade beads. Okay, we also found lots of garbage and broken glass and that sort of thing. And bones. Seems like everybody must throw bones out windows. But one of the wonderful things we found was a little lead disc that dates back to Russian-American times with an X for Kodiak that was used as a marker on the sea otter pelts. And we have that on display in the museum. Now, the other artifacts are in storage. So in 1978, we went ahead with a concrete foundation. Rasmussen Foundation in Anchorage, who are the owners of National Bank of Alaska, have helped us repeatedly with funds to improve the building, as they do with other museums and libraries throughout the state. Also at this time, Dr. Ann Trinquin from the University of Alaska Fairbanks did an extensive archaeology study around the building, bringing about 20 students who spent 2 weeks literally in the mud and rain. The weather was absolutely terrible. I thought they'd all deserved a badge for working so hard and doing their job. In 1978 also, lots 1, 3, and 4 of Block 16 became the property of the city of Kodiak. It is most important to save this whole block. This block is called Block 16. Now, in the past, it had many, many buildings on it. What we have done is those buildings have been removed either by fire, or they fell apart, or urban renewal, and we have improved the land with park service funds, and it is the only green area in downtown Kodiak and needs to be preserved. Hopefully others that come after me will have this feeling also. In 1979, we got some money from the state of Alaska, and we went upstairs and took all the dead rats and the filth. And of course, you know, anytime you have storage space, everybody puts their stuff in. And I just opened up the windows and threw things out. And then we carpeted, and we electrified, and we plumbed. And we now have this wonderful second floor that we use for storage and offices. We have archives. We have 5 4-drawer file cabinets that are absolutely full of Kodiak information. And we do help those that are writing books, doing articles, looking for what was Kodiak like in World War II, what happened here in the earthquake, tsunami of 1964, and also Katmai. Katmai was a really tremendous experience for this. This was when the volcano at Nova Rupta threw ash on Kodiak for 48 hours. And we have personal letters. We have many, many photographs. Also, Wood Island was the place where the Russians had an ice company. And many school teachers lived there. They had a school there, and even after it became part of the United States, they continued to teach school. There was a Russian priest there, and also the Baptists, American Baptists, moved in 1893 with an orphanage. So there was lots of activity at Wood Island. And one of the missionaries' granddaughters and another of the school teacher's granddaughters gave their collection to the museum. In the olden days, or like 1860, 1880, what happened is the school teachers and the missionaries were the collectors. They had the funds and they had the knowledge, and they knew what was important. And lots of times the local people didn't realize how important their things were, or they were so desperately in need of money. So we got baskets and stone artifacts and many, many wonderful photographs, which we have recopied, because old photographs, especially from like the 1890s, get very brittle. They can almost destroy themselves. So what you do is you reproduce them with a negative, and we get them in acid-free supplies, and we get them in locked, fireproof containers. So we really have a very important photograph collection. There have been several public hearings on the park. I just mentioned the park because I feel it's so beautiful. It's used by the public in the summer, and even in the winter there were people out there this morning throwing snowballs. It's just an area for the people should be able to have. We're right across the street from the ferry landing, and it's just an important downtown block area. Well, let's see. We have done some rock wall around Center Street, because this area, as they changed the roads with the Urban Renewal Project, needed some reinforcement. We installed some new porch windows. And when the oil money was prevalent in the state of Alaska, our legislatures were very kind to us and helped us get some money to strengthen the second floor. One of the things I should mention is when we did the foundation, we found that underneath the building was a big pool of water, so we removed it with drainage tile, and then what happened? Then the building started to dry up, and it took a couple of years, because it had been nice and moist, but of course nice and moist means nice and rotten. So then the second floor started to fall. So then we had to go in and strengthen this second floor, because in 1967, when they had taken out a lot of the little rooms downstairs, they'd taken out some of the supporting walls, and then when we took the lake out, we dried it up more. So Senator Bob McKay got us some money with Representative Fred Slaw, and we strengthened the second floor. We removed the two brick chimneys. There were brick chimneys that went from the first to the second to the third floor, and we're giving a lot of stress. We do have that brick saved, and I would certainly like to use it someday to do a galinka, which is a Russian stove downstairs. It's one of my dreams to still do a Russian kitchen. In 1986, we painted the exterior. We sit here with the salt water on us, and we need to be painted every 4 to 6 years. We did some more repairs. We improved the kitchen with new plywood and vinyl, and we continue to replace storm doors when they break or need replacing, and painting inside, because we are seeing a lot of people. The logs, of course, don't need a lot of maintenance, but where we have paint, it gets pretty dirty. We see about 10,000 people a year. Of course, our major busy time is May through September. But we still get a lot of local people visiting. Many people visit for the holiday season. And we've had quite a few people the last couple of days. In 1993, bringing you a little bit up to date, we went ahead and applied. We're constantly writing grants. Competition, of course, is getting keener, and we don't always get them. But we did get a federal grant in 1993, which brought a conservator, the person who knows how to take care of objects and buildings, and also an architect, an architect who is up to date on humidity control, ultraviolet damage. They were under the building, they were up in the attic. They were taking pictures, and they each gave me a one-inch report of many, many improvements which we needed to do, because when they'd done the foundation under the building, he said they hadn't attached all the little metal stanchions, which means that if we'd had a really good earthquake, I've been in this building when there's been an earthquake, and it does move. It's a very flexible building. It's no problem. But if it did move off its foundation footing, then we could really be in trouble. So those were all attached. Our vapor barrier under the building was repaired. And then again, during the administration of Governor Hickel, we have gotten some more money to improve things, the rotten front steps, doing a railing for wheelchair access. We still need to do some bathroom repairs. There's a lot of places under the building where you cannot get to insulate, so it can be very cold, especially when you've had the bitter cold weather we've had. I do want to read this little quote. This is by Barbara Sweetland Smith. In 25 years after we had been declared a National Historic Landmark, she came by for the National Park Service and did a follow-up report, because, as you know, lots and lots of things are coming out of Russia. Many, many translations are being done. More things are being known as we communicate with one another and relations become good. And this is what she said about this building. It has been altered quite a bit, and people do question us on that, but keep in mind it's been here a very long time. It started out as a two-room log building with openings from the front. It has three layers on it. It has put on at different times. The porch was added. The roof was changed. The furnace room was added. Many, many additions, one of which was destroyed in 1912 with the volcanic ash. It has been changed, but basically inside you're still seeing the same logs that were here as early as 1808. Built by the Russians in 1808, the solid log two-story structure has served Wilbur Erskine, the Alaska Commercial Company, as residence, store, and warehouse. Although of relatively crude construction, the Russian magazine was nonetheless the safeguard for the tremendous wealth of the Russian-American Company. It was built to last, and it has survived as one of only four Russian structures remaining in the United States. It is also essentially the same box-like structure erected by the Bronoff administration, its walls and basic floor plan still intact. Among the surviving Russian-era buildings, the Kodiak magazine has an additional distinction. It is the only structure which embraces the activities of both the Russian America and the Alaska Commercial Company, enterprises which shape the face of Northwestern America. Engaged not only in commerce, but in administration, law enforcement, and exploration, these companies were truly the masters of Alaska, from whence they ruled the fur markets of the world. The sea otter pelts were stored here, the foxes, and probably some fur seals from the Pribilofs. Sea otters were called soft gold. They brought lots and lots of money. While the Alaska Commercial Company was here in this area, they were very, very wealthy, as same with the Russian-American Company. It was only later that as the sea otters became less in number that people began to struggle.
I have a question. When was the newer part built, the kitchen area and the other rooms?
Okay, the kitchen was there. Keep in mind that there are logs. Okay, it was a two-room log building, and there are logs in that area. We just have not uncovered them.
Oh, okay.
When you uncover them, Kathy, it is filthy. It's just really a tremendous job, and I'm going to let someone else do that.
So that was the kitchen there?
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. If you notice the windowsills. They're very deep. And logs go all the way back into that building. It would be nice if we had lots of money and lots of help. We would expose those, and we would do an old-fashioned Russian kitchen, which would be wonderful for the public. At the moment, the space we use for receptions, some summer classes, and we're just not quite ready to give it up yet. I have thought about building an addition. Mr. Erskine had a house built next door to the Erskine house for his sister, who came here to teach school, and she was here in 1912. And my husband and his family lived in that building when they first came here, and it would be a nice building to reconstruct if you had an unlimited budget and could keep it heated and housed and staffed. You could do lots of things in it, like videos and tours and that sort of thing. There's one possibility of building an extension that was here prior to 1912 that was on the building itself that would go off from our second little room down here. But at the point, it seems like right now we need to just kind of have the status quo and be careful with our expenses. There's lots of nonprofits out there, and they're all struggling to keep going. And of course, we are a major tourist attraction. We do see lots and lots of people in the summer and help others, you know, throughout the year with writing. So I feel we're a community resource that definitely needs to be retained. Anything else?
No, that was it.
Is that enough?
I think it is.
Okay.
I interviewed Marian Johnson from the Baranoff Museum on Saturday, November 26. We talked about the progress that the museum has made from the beginning to present, and thought she had some very interesting comments and some ideas for the future.